Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Better Self Care Podcast Series. I am Brian Zimmerman, the Senior Director of Client Content and Strategy with Better Software Review. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Matthew Searles, partner, Merit Healthcare Advisors, and Zach Eisenberg, Vice President with Merit Healthcare Advisors. Matthew, Zach, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Good to be here. Thank you. Good morning.
Excellent. So with that, let's dive right in. So the first question I have here are, you know, why is the timing, why might it be right for psychiatry CPM now?
Sure. This is Matt. I'll answer that. You know, at a very high level, here's a few factors to consider. First, it's just fundamentally underserved. It has always been underserved and never really recognized the enormous impact mental health can have on physical health. So that's just a fundamental that we like to start with when we talk about the space. There's also a real shortage of supply. So HHS says that of the 45,000 or so psychiatrists, we are looking at about a 6-8% shortage relative to population's need. And that by 2025, they think that will exceed 10%, 12% or higher was their actual projection. So you know, we know there's an increase in depression, anxiety, addiction, eating disorders. Sadly, these are accelerating with young Americans more than they are with older Americans. You know, COVID is contributing to this as well, but this trend has and will continue and will exacerbate these supply issues. You know, a third, just structurally, the way these practices are set up, they're highly fragmented, which we'll talk more about, but you know, they are not set up in a way that is efficient from a cost or population perspective.
Aside from a structural standpoint, these practices are much more well-suited for telehealth solutions as compared to other specialties. So part of what we've seen during COVID is an increase in telemedicine across specialties, but particularly in mental health services and psychiatry and therapy specifically. And it's very well situated for that kind of patient interaction.
Absolutely. You know, from a payer perspective, as we talk about some more fundamentals, there's a growing recognition by payers, right, of the importance of mental health treatment, which has led to expansion of these types of benefits, which obviously also increases demand. A related tailwind, right, is that this supply-demand dynamic leads to leverage with managed care payers in terms of pricing. That's a good positive thing for that space. I won't get into this more, but what's always striking to us is the correlation between mortality and health expenditures related to people with mental health issues. So the cost to treat these people, these folks who suffer from these illnesses, is just simply much higher and, you know, becomes a, you know, comorbidity, so to speak, and relates to, you know, exacerbation, worsening of other physical conditions. So that's why, just at a high level, and we think psychiatry GPNs are going to have and will continue to draw a lot of interest.
Yeah, no, I think you both laid out there just sort of, you know, the reason there's a need for it, right, among patients is sort of an engagement model, right, and how providers can benefit as well. And you pointed out how, you know, payers are this growing recognition for this the need that patients have for these, you know, essential services, really. But I wonder if we can throw in and talk a bit more about why are these models advantageous target for strategic and you know, private equity companies?
Sure, you really start, you know, looking at any of these medical specialties that are being, you know, subject to kind of GPM activity. They're fragmented, right? They're relatively inefficient delivery models. There are many routes set up from a technology perspective to reduce costs or participate in alternative payment models. You know, they're also highly scalable. So if you look at psychiatry, there's an ease of expansion here related to other specialties. Right? Similar to primary care, you know, all you need is an office or a journal in the case of definition telemed, but it's higher margin than primary care. There are also many opportunities for expansion into autism, depression, substance abuse, you know, medication research trials. And like primary care, psychiatrists can be great referral sources for other treatment options.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to add is at a macro level, demographic trends, unfortunately, are very favorable for this. So another thing that we look at when we're targeting clients and sectors that we're interested in, so looking at where is the need going to be in the future? And mental health is one of those spaces where among younger Americans, the increase or the trends are favorable from a business perspective. There's an increased rate of depression, anxiety, and eating disorders, and this will lead to, down the road, a favorable business environment for investors and these DPM platforms.
Absolutely. Zach touched on demographic trends before this call we were talking about. There's just an endless abyss of statistics that we can throw around. But just fundamentally, it's the relationship between mental illness and your physical health and cost that relates to that. So again, HHS, Health and Human Services, they estimate 1 in 4 adults, by adult, they need a gene over, suffers from a mental health disorder and potentially more than one at a time. And so what does that mean? What's the manifestation of that? You know, similar studies with NIH show that mortality is significantly higher among people that are mentally ill. So they've done studies that have shown that, you know, of a certain population of folks that are mentally ill, 70% of the deaths that these people, you know, are related to natural causes, about 18% unnatural causes like accidents, and the rest are unexplained. And the median years of life loss is about 10 years. And they further estimated 14.3% of deaths worldwide are attributable to mental disorders. And so we know that the highest cost of healthcare relates to the last months, weeks, days of life. To the extent that these patients are sicker, and they are, there's a direct correlation between mental health and worsening of the physical condition. And so it has an enormous impact on costs. Just from a demographic perspective, that's what the studies show.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are some pretty sobering statistics there, and, you know, definitely points to the deep need for these services. And I don't want to come off as insensitive here, but I do want to focus on sort of like the business element of this, because there is a deep need. We have, you know, it's got to be, these folks have to be serviced. So the next question then would be, you know, what is critical mass of these businesses, and, you know, how are multiple affected in this space?
Sure. So I think not dissimilar from other specialties. You know, investors are generally looking for platform-type investments. Folks that have set up businesses, and we have clients like this now, that are set up to manage a large group of providers. They have the systems that can, you know, certainly collect the data that's necessary to participate in any type of payer system. And they're, you know, run by professional managers. That's a platform that can be scaled quickly and easily. And that, I think, is ideally what these investors are looking for. So some of them are already platforms themselves. They may be more interested than a private equity firm in going after smaller practices. But, you know, nonetheless, we would say that in any case, it's still very, very, very early. So you're not seeing a whole lot of, relative to other specialties, you know, platforms in the space. And to the extent that they exist, they are, from our experience, certainly drawing enough interest, creating enough of a competitive process where those multiples are quite high. You know, we always you know, look at platforms maybe like a 9 to 12 multiple, potentially even higher, whereas a single practice, you know, obviously less attractive just because they aren't set up as well for scalability, maybe trading in the below that range, let's say 4 to 6 to 7. Zach, what are your thoughts on that?
I just add that as far as scalability, when these businesses are really attractive, it really comes down to the patient population. I think you said it earlier, Nat, like primary care, these practices are fairly inexpensive to expand. And so the gating factor that investors are looking at is really the patient population. And so the new service lines that generate revenue and earnings, like more interventional psychiatry services, like an ECT or a TNS service, I mean, those really will be propelled forward by that patient population. So I think that's the number one criteria that investors are looking at. Obviously, having the other ancillaries built out is important, but as compared to other specialties, like looking at a higher acuity orthopedic practice, where having the ambulatory surgery center and surgery side of that specialty is key to getting investors interested in psychiatry or in psychology, it's much more important to have the patient population, the brand awareness.
Yeah, you know, just fundamentally, saying we throw this around to the firm a lot, you know, just delineation of duties, right? So physicians should do what they do well. And there are some exceptions, folks, we find that are extraordinary businessmen and women that are an exception. But for the most part, a physician is not trained to do payer contracting. They're not trained to do the business aspects of their practice. They're not trained to recruit other and manage other doctors. So to the extent that these models are created to assist the physician groups in doing that, manage them in doing that, it just creates efficiencies that don't exist now. And that's why we see PPM models out there with some prevalence and we're going to continue to. It's just that basic level, that fundamental gap between expertise and application that you see in the physician universe, which is, you know, over time certainly migrating more and more towards larger organizations. But you know, there's just that fundamental that certainly exists in this, you know, very early stage roll-up opportunity with psychiatrists.
Absolutely. I think you both did a wonderful job of laying all that out for our listeners. I want to ask now, you know, what enables psychiatry practices to take advantage of emerging and evolving payment models? And, you know, how do they have the ability to bend the cost curve? I know I think this touched on earlier in our discussion, but I wonder if we can zero in.
I'll jump in on that. I think one of the central factors here to really reduce costs in the system is early and consistent intervention with patients. You know, Matt was saying this earlier, mental health patients overall can be a very large cost burden for the system. And so for practitioners in the space, it's particularly important to get in touch with those patients early in their mental health disease life cycle, but also consistently be in touch with them throughout so that they can avoid going into that long-term psychiatric hospital setting where it's an enormous cost to the system. And as far as negotiating with payers, I think psychiatric and psychotherapy practices in general negotiate from a very good position with payers because of that reason. They can ask for a bit more in terms of their day-to-day treatment options because the payers know that they're avoiding paying those higher acuity payments down the road to these other treatment facilities.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're focusing a lot on the impact and correlation between mental health and physical health, which, of course, is, you know, primary area to improve the mental health, you're going to improve physical health, and that bends the cost curve. There's also productivity issues. You know, folks that suffer from depression, for instance, are not generally productive, difficulty holding down jobs, things of that nature. So if we drift away from the healthcare side of this a little bit, even just in the general productivity, there's an impact there.
Absolutely. Make a lot of sense when you think about it from the standpoint of just the productivity piece and, you know, the ability of these organizations to negotiate with payers. And I'm wondering, though, if you can share any specific case studies with our listeners right now. Obviously, we can keep these anonymous, but I would love to just hear any specifics you can share.
Yeah, so we do have psychiatry PPM clients, and I list a few general observations. A lot of the folks that we speak to are early stage, meaning they're not quite at the point from our perspective where maybe we look at them, investing entity, we look at them as a platform. So we're doing a lot of, you know, coaching, trying to get folks to understand what, you know, fundamentals they need to have in place in order to be only the market expect to get some type of, you know, platform recognition. But the clients that we do have, you know, I can say, you know, we've done some cardiology deals recently that are very highly competed, but in terms of the number and breadth of type of investor, these deals are at the very, you know, end of the bell curve in a good way. We have a deal moving along now where, you know, multiple site, 50 plus providers, and I believe we got over 10 bids, which is unusual. It really is 10 competitive bids where, you know, in most instances it's going to be less than that, just usually how that process works. But so we find enormous interest, and so that's a live deal moving along now that is just, I wouldn't say it surprised us, but it surprised us in terms of the veracity of market for it.
Yeah, and just one thing to add to that, Matt, what was particularly surprising about that client was really the number of firms that even wanted to sign an NDA and take a look at the documents. I think we had over 50 firms sign an NDA, which is pretty unheard of. Our typical clients are anywhere from 20 to 25 NDAs, even though we sent the teaser or the opportunity to roughly the same number of firms, 300 or 400 firms and investors. The response is just overwhelming. The other thing I'd say is that as far as multiples of value is concerned, it appears there's a lot more interest in this client because of the scale of psychiatrists and the patient population. Obviously, the real earnings number is important, but that multiple is being driven up quite a bit because of just the scale they've achieved on the provider side.
Thank you both for sharing those details. I think they'll be helpful to our listeners as they, you know, wrap their heads around this change, this changing landscape. And the next question now, I wonder if we can zoom out a bit here and just think about and talk about some trends in services for patients. Right? I imagine telehealth is a big one, especially in psychiatry. So I wonder if we can dive in here and talk a little bit more about these trends.
I'll touch on telehealth, exactly, it's some trends, but it just lends itself so well to telehealth compared to, you know, orthopedics, for instance. It's just, there's not often a physical aspect to this patient-doctor relationship. So I think, you know, our clinicians tell us they certainly would rather be in front of a patient, you know, watching certain characteristics are harder to see over Zoom, but they certainly can effectively treat. And so it really is a really strong fit for telemed.
Yeah, just jumping off of that, Matt. Our clients have said they think, you know, a majority of their patients would be comfortable, and they'd be comfortable treating the majority of their patients over telehealth solutions, which, again, is much different than what you see in other specialties. What I also say is that interventional psychiatry services, which I mentioned earlier, are on the rise, particularly for depression among adults between the ages of 18 and 30, something like that. The rate of depression has basically doubled in the last decade. So there's a lot of attention being paid to treatments for depression and major depressive disorders, including Spravato, which is the branding for esketamine, and then TMS and ECT services, which are really the most immediate ancillary services that any psychiatry practice can be thinking about.
Thank you both. I mean, we really dove in here and talked about the big macro trends sort of driving the need for more mental health services and, you know, details on why these are, you know, essentially attractive businesses for investment and, you know, essential really to what the country needs and what these demographics, just as you both pointed out. Matt, Zach, I just want to invite you here before we close out. Any final thoughts or comments you want to share with listeners? Matt, you go first, and then Zach, you want to close us out here?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, we're very excited about the space. We think that it's nice to work on projects and deals that really have a substantive positive impact in the world. And, you know, I think we've said to our clients many times that the PPM shoe does not fit every foot. It's not a transactional answer to every question, but we really feel like we're in a spot here where it is a very good fit for this type of structure. And again, it just adds great value at a high level, which is something to feel good about.
couldn't have said it better myself, Matt. Completely agreed. And I'll just leave it there and say Happy New Year's. Enjoy the conversation.
Thanks all.
Absolutely. Thank you both for taking the time. It was a great discussion.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And I'd also like to thank Merit Healthcare Advisors as well for sponsoring this episode. Listeners, you can tune in to more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at BeckersHospitalReview.com.